Nice. And football. Nice. That's what Maryland does.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Are you a big man? Pop, I'm talking to you.
What?
You wake up in the morning, you start to put on my big boy pants. You put on a little jacket, you go. You take your lunch because you got big boy pants on.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
I can say big loud things. I can be demonstrative. This is how you conduct yourself in a democracy.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We want to look to the future. We've got to tear down the past. Babe Ruth was nothing more than a fat old man with little girl legs.
The Fan. I
want it all. All right, welcome back in. Hour number two here on 1080 The Fan. We're getting closer to bowl season.
Yeah, when's the first one? Saturday?
I think so.
We got to make our Pac-12 bowl picks this week.
I know we swag asked if we were going to do it last week, and I was like, no, probably next week since it's Dirt's last week.
Yeah, we'll make some Pac-12 bowl picks on Friday.
Just go through all of them, yeah.
Let's go.
We have a lot we're going to get to. Gary Anderson hired as a head coach again after just 1 year. And then we've got the Heisman conversation to talk about as well.
Yeah, we haven't gotten into that yet.
I was surprised how much of a margin Kyler Murray won by.
Hmm.
That'd be
yeah,
super close.
And yeah, it wasn't as close, yeah, I guess, as you thought it was going to be.
So we'll dive into that a little bit as well. But it's time for our NFL whip around.
Frozen Tundra.
Yes. San Diego Superchargers.
Oh, I missed that. That sucks. Now we can't do that anymore because it's in LA.
Can they just move back to San Diego?
They should. Really, really should.
Like,
Andrew.
Just admit. Hey, we screwed up. Our bad. Nobody wants us here. San Diego would welcome them back, wouldn't they?
With open arms. They're right? Good.
Come on.
The All second right. they go back to San Diego, they lose the rest
of
the game.
Oh, I know.
Rivers throws three picks. They fall out of the playoff chase.
All right, well, let's start with one of the games we didn't get to in hour number one, and it was a damn good football game between Philly and Dallas.
Fourth and 10. Goff, can the Rams stay alive? They can. Another interception. Luke Kamara this time. Four picks. Bear defense. One for the books tonight.
Omaha, Omaha.
Hot route, hot route.
As you can hear, Al Michaels is actually just picking us up, and he's going to take us to Chicago where the Bears played a defensive game last night. They win 15-6 over the Rams, as he mentioned there. Jared Goff, 20 of 44 for 180 and four picks. And how about them Bears, 9-4 on the season?
Yeah, it goes back to what I was talking about a little bit ago, kind of the resurgence of defense in the National Football League now the last 2 weeks. You've seen teams like Baltimore, like Chicago, and like Dallas really play great football as of late against elite-level offenses. And I think it adds to the intrigue of the playoff chase. Potential matchups when you see a team like Chicago do that to L.A., it was incredible. I mean, L.A. has been largely unstoppable this year, and they forced Goff to throw four picks, hold them down like that. I mean, that was an unbelievable performance. I think the story for all those teams, and we'll get to Dallas in a moment, it's going to come down to the question of, do they have enough offense to win? Defensively, we know how talented they are, but with Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, Dallas and Dak Prescott, and Chicago last night, with Trubisky, while it was a great win for them, I mean, you go look at Trubisky's numbers. He threw three picks and barely had 100 yards passing.
So, yeah, I mean, the Rams' defense played pretty well.
You're not. It's hard for me to trust long-term, but defensively, they're going to keep him in every game.
I think it makes you really wonder. They're hosting a playoff game in Soldier Field.
Yeah, I mean, good luck scoring on them.
I know. I think it's a crazy, tough environment with cold weather. All right, this time let's hear from the losing coach of that great Philly-Dallas game, Doug Peterson.
I'm not going to sit here and criticize. That's not my place. We have an opportunity. We have a protocol that we can use to turn in plays. I know it doesn't help us. It doesn't change the output of the football game. It is what it is there, but there are plays that we want to get a ruling on and just see if what we thought was correct or inaccurate. And so we've done that on several plays. We're still waiting on some input back on that, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, there's Doug Peterson. Look, the officiating in this game was terrible, but Amari Cooper was a monster for the Cowboys. He had over 217 receiving yards, three touchdowns, and he got the game-winning touchdown on a defensive tip in overtime.
That was a wild ending.
29-23, Dallas gets the dub.
Yeah, look, the officiating is one of the stories out of this game, unfortunately. It starts with the opening kickoff. That was a clear fumble, a clear recovery, and I don't know what the hell the referees in New York were watching during that replay. Malcolm Jenkins, I know, came out with some thoughts on that after the game. It's unfortunate when it's a storyline. We know that as Pac-12 fans. We see it all the time, and that was kind of the running joke on Twitter. And again, I mean, I'll go back to what I just said about Chicago. You look at Dallas where this was a close fought game, and then you had an offensive explosion in the fourth quarter with Philly scoring 17 and Dallas scoring 14. For as good of a win and as good as Dallas is playing, Dak Prescott threw two really bad picks in this game. He also had a fumble. I mean, three turnovers really helped Philadelphia turn some momentum and get back into this ball game. But the big revelation for them has been Amari Cooper, 217 yards and three touchdowns yesterday. He has been a phenomenal downfield threat for them. He's the number one target they've desperately needed now for a couple of years. So they have a balanced offense. You got to get rid of those turnovers if you're Dak Prescott.
Kansas City hosted Baltimore, and they played what felt like a playoff game, and Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs got the win.
I knew it had a chance. I knew Tyreek was going to have to do what he did. I knew it didn't sell over the linebacker. It was kind of that one he had to come back and get. And, I mean, I always say he's like – he'd be the best center fielder of all time because of the way he tracks the ball. And so he knew, and he stepped in front of the guy and made a great catch and then made a great run after the catch.
Well, I mean, you know, I think you guys should write what you see. You know, I mean, you want us to get up there and criticize the officiating. I saw the officiating all day. I know what it was. So, you know, just write what you see. You don't get fined for it. Right.
Very true, John Harbaugh. So Mahomes there on Tyreek Hill, that fourth down play he made where he's running to his right, he heaves it up, and Tyreek Hill comes up with the catch on fourth down. They made a couple more plays than Baltimore. Baltimore had their shot. They played great defense all game. But the Chiefs moved to 11-2, and they beat Baltimore in overtime.
Yeah, story of defense as well. I mean, Kansas City pulled this one out of their rear end late. The fourth down conversion was a miracle. They get the score to ultimately tie it, send it to overtime. Then they had a chance to win at the end of regulation after a Lamar Jackson fumble, rookie making a mistake. They missed the field goal attempt, and they go to overtime and eventually win it. But defensively, Baltimore going into Kansas City, like a lot of these other good defensive examples, you have teams playing on the road in New Orleans, in Dallas, or the Rams last night in Chicago. This one, I mean, Baltimore went into their house and really slowed down Kansas City most of the day. I thought they missed Kareem Hunt. The rushing attack wasn't necessarily there, and they got a little more banged up at that position. But Kansas City pulls this one out, which is going to be huge for home field advantage.
All right, let's go to Green Bay, the Packers' first game without Mike McCarthy, and they take care of business against the Atlanta Falcons. Here's Aaron Rodgers.
Just really proud of those guys, the way they battled, and they had a good week, and we all did. I think this was a really good week of practice. Now, sometimes that gets thrown around and said in situations like this where it's trying to galvanize some sort of false confidence, but in actuality, it was probably our cleanest, fastest, most efficient week of practice that we've had this season. And thankfully, it doesn't always do this, but thankfully it showed up today in our execution.
So, shot at McCarthy, or do you think he's just trying to acknowledge that they practice well finally?
That has to be a shot at McCarthy.
Gotta be, yeah. Right? They look good. They look better. You think they're still in the playoff picture?
No, I don't.
Because they have the Bears this weekend in Chicago right now. They are 10th. In the wild card.
Yeah, look. I mean, good luck winning that one in Chicago with the way the Bears are playing defense. They lost the head-to-head matchup recently with Seattle. They lost the head-to-head matchup a couple weeks ago with Minnesota.
The Bears blew that last game, too, by the way. Remember that
they
one?
They did. They had them on the ropes. And
that was when you proclaimed him the greatest quarterback of all time.
I did, because he kept me in my survivor pool for like three more weeks. Yes, it's a shot at McCarthy, but I also think there's some truth to it. Like, you see that often when coaches get fired. It's a wake-up call for a team, and they realize a guy who had been – how long was McCarthy in Green Bay? He was there for like a 12-year. He was there forever.
Long time.
So you finally get a change. It's kind of a kick in the pants to the team. They realize that they haven't been playing well. They come out with a clear game. But let's also not overlook the fact that the Falcons are not a good football team, and that was a part of this equation as well.
All right, then one final cut here. Denver on the road against San Francisco, and Boyd, it was a record day for tight end George Kittle of the Niners.
From the pistol to 15, snap to Mullins, play action for Wilson. He guns it right side, caught by Kittle at the 30, 35, 40, open space 50, cuts inside 35, 30, 25, 20, through an acreage of open field to the end zone, a touchdown. 85 yards for the 49ers, electric number 85.
ESPN Radio on the call there. The Niners upset the Broncos, and they win 20-14. George Kittle had 7 catches for 210 yards and a touchdown in the first half. He didn't have another catch. He was 5 away from the all-time record. Right.
How do you not get him one more? Throw a screen, do something.
I'm sorry, but when you're playing defense the way they were, your goal should be to make him set that record, right?
I would think so.
But yeah, they played really well against Denver, and Denver now 6-7 on the season.
Yeah, that's an inexcusable loss for the Broncos. Keenum was not good. Captain checked down. They couldn't get the running game going. San Francisco just came out with a little more motivation early on. I know some Niner fans were upset because of the number one pick implications. Them winning that game, the Raiders winning them. I mean, if they would have lost, they would have had the a foot up on everybody for that number one pick. But instead, they're at 3-10 tied. Denver, you can't go on the road and lose a game like that. They've been playing good football, and offense doesn't show up until too late. They don't give up any points in the second half, but too little too late for Denver.
All right, there's our NFL whip around. We do it every Monday at 1 o'clock. We will stick in the National Football League and then go to college football. Coming up next, Oakland making an interesting move and kind of an eye-opening stat involving the Cleveland Browns. My Cleveland Browns. Tell you what that is next on The Fan. Has come,
and the land is dark. This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Gary Anderson back. We got the Heisman Trophy. Do people watch the Heisman Trophy ceremony? Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
Somebody said that you're just talking about the Heisman Trophy for sports radio segment. I don't always care about the Heisman Trophy. I thought this year was really interesting because of...
It was a fun debate.
Well, I mean, if we're being real honest, Tua was the better was the best player in college football of what, 2 of the 3 months?
Yeah.
Kyler came on at the end, and then obviously he had the conference championship
record. There's more to it than
record.
That, though, I think. There's more to it.
I know, but that still makes for like, oh, it's clearly this guy, but one guy was the better player. Or not better player, but... best player for a majority of the season.
Because I look at it the way, I mean, what would Oklahoma have been? And granted, I don't know who their backup is this year. What would Oklahoma have been without Kyler Murray this season?
Well, they had a Heisman last year, so I'm just going to assume the next guy's a Heisman winner.
They're going to win a third in a row.
Also, they faced Big 12 defenses. So
that they did.
I guess that'd be good.
I mean, yeah, let's not act like Tua played this gauntlet of a top 10 schedule all season long.
I know.
So, and I think when you have a situation where you are playing terrible and your team's on the ropes and your backup quarterback comes in and wins the biggest game of the year for you,
mm-hmm.
I think that plays into it a little bit.
Yeah, and there's no doubt.
Jalen Hurts came in and won that game against Georgia.
Right, right. And
so
I think
it leaves you wondering, could anybody quarterback Alabama to 12-0? Because Jalen Hurts did it basically back-to-back. How many games did Jalen Hurts lose as a starter? He was a starter for two full seasons.
I think he lost 2 or 3 games.
I think he lost the national title to Clemson and then the game to Auburn are the only two that come to my mind.
That's probably it then.
So he lost 2 games as a starter in 2 years.
But how do we know Lincoln Riley and Oklahoma aren't becoming the new, could anybody be the quarterback in that system?
Yeah, I would have voted for Kyler Murray.
You would have.
I would have given Kyler Murray my vote because I think it's a mix of the best player and the most valuable player.
Sure.
And I think you can easily argue that Kyler Murray was more valuable than Tua, but you can argue that Tua was a better player than Kyler Murray.
For a larger chunk of the season.
But I would side with Kyler because I think you look at some of those close games for Oklahoma. We're just going to do the segment right now. If you look at some of those close games for Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma just with a good, not out of this world quarterback goes 9-3 this year at best.
What games do they lose, you think?
Well, they almost lost to West Virginia. They had to score 56 in that game to win because their defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. Yep. They beat Texas Tech, I want to say, by, 5 or 6 points. They barely beat Oklahoma State.
So they might have lost 4.
They could have been an 8-4. I mean, they had 4 or 5 games where they had to score almost 60 just to win the game.
But see, here's the flip side, though, is I see what you're saying about the defense. But again, all of those games you just mentioned are games where they scored over 45 points.
Yeah.
So they faced, so even if it's
terrible
not,
defense is a part of it. Yeah.
Right. Even if it's not Kyler Murray level, I think even a guy slightly below him is maybe still getting through that schedule with one loss. And I'll even throw it this way, and this might not be the right direction in terms of voting for Heisman, but how different do you feel about Alabama if you find out Tua can't play at all in the playoffs versus having Tua going into the playoffs and their chances?
I wouldn't be shocked at all if they won it without him.
Ooh. See, I would pick Clemson to beat them, and I would almost wonder if Oklahoma could maybe beat them.
I feel very different.
I do, too.
Jalen Hurts playing well in a half in a SEC title game does not mean that he is as good as Tua or can do what Tua is.
And I think we all know that.
Nobody's going to argue that.
I'm not going to argue he's as good as Tua, right. But we're also, like, Jalen Hurts has been to a national title game. He's won playoff games. He beat Clemson last year.
Georgia.
No, they beat Clemson in the semifinal game.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But here's the flip side.
Look, this is, and it's unfair.
It's an endless conversation, really, but.
It's unfair to Tua because he just has to live with it because he plays on the best team. There's a reason he didn't play any fourth quarters.
Right.
It's because they won every game by like 50 points.
I think here's my problem with it is I saw this stat. So people were putting in their Heisman ballots even before the championship games happened, right?
Which I like that. Right. I think if we're going to go regular season, get them in before the conference championship.
And some people
games.
Did. Or a lot of people do.
You think they should vote before the conference title game?
Well, the tough part with that is what about the guys who don't get to play conference title games but have great seasons?
Yeah.
That should count in my mind.
Either way, they showed the graph of the votes. Tua was far and away winning the Heisman. And then all the voters after championship Saturday
switched
to Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
I think it's BS that one game changes the minds of that many voters. Because Tua got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even play.
Well, he was awful in that game.
Well, he got hurt like on the third play of the game and then came back in.
He threw a pick. He was
awful. And then got hurt again.
I've defended him, though. He had like three big drops.
He also threw two terrible interceptions, and he was a huge reason why they were down by 14 in that game.
But one game should not be the deciding factor when everyone is voting Tua. They watch one game and they go, oh, well. Actually, it's Kyler Murray.
See, no, and I would agree with that if it was such a clear night and day, like the other guy's not that good. Kyler Murray had better numbers than Baker Mayfield last year.
Yeah.
Like Kyler Murray was.
He had a great. I said this all right. Both guys are very deserving.
So
of
that's
it.
Where I get. Like, I get it. But then when you have a quarterback going to a situation, I don't mean to sound like I'm just dumping on Tua. He is an out of this world player, and he's going to be a top five pick when he goes, and he's probably going to be a stud in the NFL. But when you have a guy who benefits from a really bad schedule, I think their closest game was the win over LSU that was like a 29-0. Did they have any other games that were closer than that?
Auburn was close in the first half.
Okay,
that
and
game
they end
was
up,
pretty close.
They end up winning by 30.
31.
They outscored. Them like 30-0 in the second half.
Yes, they did.
And then you go into a game that is a elimination game for Georgia. Alabama would have been in either way, but you're playing your toughest opponent of the season in a neutral site, and you look the way that he looked. Sure, the injury was a part of it, but he was bad in that game. His timing was off in the pocket. He threw two bad interceptions, one of them in the end zone that took points off the board them.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't have a problem with that being with the equation. If Kyler Murray came out and crapped the bet against Texas and they lost the Big 12 title game and missed out on the playoffs, he's not winning the Heisman.
But see, here's where we kind of differ. I see what you're saying, and you're not wrong, but to Mike's point, like Tua basically was not allowed to have even one half of a bad game, whereas Kyler got to lose a game to a team that I don't think could beat the best two teams on Alabama's schedule.
Sure.
I think if Texas had to face Auburn or LSU, I would pick both the SEC teams to beat them. And Kyler Murray got to lose that game. And by the way, they were getting blown out in that one.
They were.
Whereas Tua, I hear what you're saying. The bad pick in the end zone, I'm with you. Also suffered an injury. He basically was punished for even looking human for the whole season. And part of this is the Alabama's so damn good conversation. But I think if we just ran the numbers, how much better has Alabama been this year offensively than any team Nick Saban's ever had? It's not close.
Yeah, they're a juggernaut. They're right? The most talented. Their backups are more talented than probably 90% of college football teams.
Tua's how much of that is Tua? Offense. Yeah, Tua changed everything they've been offensively to a point
that
they
can throw the ball
close.
Down the field and they can rely on him and not just running the ball in little short passes.
I think prior to this season, the most points a Nick Saban team has averaged, and I hope I'm not wrong, so text please correct me if I am.
Just dumping all over AJ McCarron right now.
No, I think it was like 32 or 31 points per game. They averaged like 54.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's Alabama, sure, but Tua takes it to a level that is just stupid.
I also don't think Tua should be punished for not playing in the fourth quarter, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, well, he didn't play four quarters every game. Well, I'm sorry, are they supposed to leave him in to get hurt when they're up by 35, 40 points?
No.
If he was playing into those fourth quarters, imagine what his stats would be, right? You shouldn't punish him for that. You should just look at it and try to put it as a relevant number next to what Kyler Murray did.
Well, the snaps can be tough. I think Kyler had 300 more snaps on the season.
Right, because they had to. He had to play full games. Yeah, and that's not a negative against. The only negative that I'll use about that is it just shows how much talent that he has around him, which to me is part of the equation. It goes back to me, and some people might not think this is fair, the whole Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey debate. Like, Derrick Henry was playing with those offensive linemen with Alabama, and Christian McCaffrey had better numbers. He's playing for Stanford, who's a very good football program, but has nowhere, not even in the same league of having Alabama talent. That, to me, is a part of the equation of who you have around you. There's a reason they built those huge leagues, is because nobody could score on their biggest games of the year. Their biggest regular season game, LSU couldn't get a damn first down against them. You could have won that game at quarterback for because all you needed was hand the ball off enough on one drive to get into field goal range, kick a field goal, go up 3-0, and you win that game.
Here's the other part, though. If you played the fun game, I'm almost curious, of those two teams, who has more current NFL offensive linemen, though, Stanford or Alabama? Of those, that year's team.
I mean, it's probably pretty similar.
I bet it's pretty close.
But I would still side with Alabama.
I see where you're coming from, though. Like, the I don't know.
Dude, it's Alabama.
I know.
They go undefeated no matter who their quarterback is.
But we also can't act like Oklahoma is some random nobody that had a great season.
I'm not saying that. Their defense is 102nd in the country.
Right. The defense played pretty well against Texas in the Big 12 title game.
In one game.
But that's the game, though. That's the difference.
Sure, but if you don't have Kyler Murray and they're scoring 60 points a game in the regular season, they could have gone 8-4.
Probably.
Without him bailing out his team time after time after time.
How many quarterbacks, if we played the futuristic game, right, where we're at with Alabama and what you're saying, how many more years does Lincoln Riley need before you play this game with Oklahoma quarterback?
Oh, a long time.
So if the next year's guy, whoever the hell that is, wins the Heisman, are we going to sit here and go, yeah, he was easily number one. The defense, are we going to go, is the third year in a row that the Lincoln Riley-led offensive team has put up like 60 points a game.
Yeah, I think...
How inept does Alabama look just with their past quarterbacks, too? I think that's another part that I factor in. I know the defensive argument.
Sure, but they would still go undefeated no matter who was there. Oklahoma's not going undefeated every year.
But when you win 9-6 or 12-9 or whatever the hell they won by with low margins versus winning 56-0 or... Hell, the LSU game, what was that, 29-0?
Somewhere in that range, yeah.
When you win that way.
Yeah, somebody said their closest game this year was a 24-0 win over Mississippi State.
Probably, yeah. When
that was their
spread-wise, yeah.
That was their closest game of the year.
Right. Tell the Georgia game,
look,
yeah.
Tell the Georgia game. This is why, to me, it's a fun conversation. It's because people, like, not often do you get this opinionated about the Heisman.
I know. We haven't had it in a while.
Some years you're like, When was the last year
we had this? Was it Henry McCaffrey?
I'm trying to think. I mean, last year was Baker Mayfield. He kind of ran away with it.
We all knew he was winning.
The year before that, you had the Lamar Jackson debate because I want to say they had three or didn't they have a bunch of,
he had three
not
losses.
A bunch, but they had, it was like, can you win it with three losses?
He was RG3 again.
He was.
Can you have three losses in a year and win it? And I said yes.
Yeah, Mariota year wasn't really a debate.
Slam dunk.
Jameis, you had the off-field stuff. People wondered, can you win it with the allegations that were surrounding him?
But they went undefeated. It was hard to argue against that. And he was really good that year.
So, that's why this year was fun for me, was because...
McCaffrey-Henry was your last one then,
probably,
right?
Yeah. That I was outraged about the outcome.
Well, you're not outraged by this.
No, because I would have voted for Kyler Murray.
Right, yeah.
But also, hold on, I know we're against it now.
By the way, Gardner Minshew got 6 votes. For first place.
6 first place votes?
6 people in the country voted for Gardner Minshew seriously as a Heisman Trophy
winner.
Dude,
he had a great season, but if you wasted a number one vote on him, you should probably lose
your vote.
Are they
all from the Spokane area?
I'll look up if we can find out who they were.
Dude, yeah, he should have been in New York. I would have loved to have seen him as a finalist. But
me too. He should have been Haskins.
Stop. How are you voting for him over Kyler Murray or Tua? It's just... There was...
I don't know why you would vote for Minshew over those two guys.
Let me ask you this, because I feel this way about Hall of Fame votes.
Okay.
Can you... Either of you name me...
Yeah.
...who Darrell Henderson is?
Darrell Henderson. Played in 1974 for the Steel Curtain.
Mike?
Darrell.
Darrell Henderson, right?
Mike went, Ricky's brother.
So I had never heard of Darrell Henderson.
Okay.
He plays for Memphis. Yeah. I don't know what position, but he plays for, I'm assuming, a running back, quarterback, somewhere like. He plays for Memphis. He had 3 second-place Heisman votes.
Is he?
Oh, that's the running back.
He's the running back, yeah. With
he got three. I don't care how. He got 3 second-place Heisman votes?
Those are probably 9 people that we should question about taking the vote away.
You should have to make your vote public, and we should have the ability to take away votes.
Well, I always appreciate people who are honest about who they vote for, but what I, like, Joel Klatt basically leaked on Friday that he voted for Kyler to Dusty and Cam. What I don't like is when you make dumb votes.
Mackenzie Milton got 4 first-place votes.
Come on.
He deserves to get votes, not first-place
votes.
Sure.
You want to put him in third, fourth, fifth, where you want to throw him on there somewhere, give him some points, I'm fine with that.
And that's my point on Minshew. You want to say Minshew's worthy of being top 3?
Absolutely.
I'm not going to argue that. I thought he should have been in New York alongside with Dwayne Haskins, but number one?
Well, and that's the thing, and that's the whole other argument with the Heisman Trophy ceremony and the voting. Is it's all a popularity contest, right? So Kyler Murray is a flashier player than Tua, and he did it later in the season where Tua had a little bit of a slower end of the season.
Ooh, that's a debatable thing in itself, I think.
But either way,
I think when Tua's healthy, they're very similar.
Kyler's he's running around his speed.
Right, well, they're shifty, though, and he's a lefty.
It's just more electric in Oklahoma, whereas Alabama's very kind of just, here we are, we're Bama, we're going to score.
An 80-yard touchdown, we'll run by you, and you can't cover us.
Right. And see, you and I can disagree on where we vote, but I think overall, if Tua won or Kyler, who did win.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been outraged if Tua won.
We're not mad about it, right? Those are clearly the two who should have. My thing is, now that you've changed the topic and we're way over, how the hell are you, how do you justify Gardner Minshew?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
That's
so it's a popularity contest also.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of voters go, well, I know what this is, and I need to prove to those people who think it's a popularity contest, I'm going to vote for this guy. And they go, Gardner Minshew, number one.
I know Gardner Minshew,
because
too.
Because I know Kyler Murray's getting 900 votes from this week.
Right, you know
I'm
he's
voting
win.
For Gardner Minshew.
It's like the idiot.
So you're doing it to just be different. That's dumb.
Right, it's like the idiot Baseball Hall of Fame voters who don't put Ken Griffey Jr. on their ballot.
Yeah, the, like, remember that? Person. Yeah, there
like,
was one
you
person.
More like, stop. Like, you, there's no moral high ground here. You're not smarter than anybody. Like, you have a vote. Vote for Ken Griffey Jr.
Klatt, by the way, since I brought him up, he tweeted on Saturday night. There was, give me 1 second, Mike, and I promise we'll break because I know we're way the hell over it. Let me see if I can find it. Give me just
I'm
1 second.
I'm used to this break. Don't worry.
One of those primetime 2-minute segments. Hey, welcome back. Coming up next.
Yeah, he had, I can't find it. He had a tweet out there. I can't remember the exact number, but it was a huge chunk of the voters that didn't even have Tua on their ballot.
What?
Yeah. This is the Minshew one, not two on the ballot. These are our problems with these kind of awards.
Yeah,
ceremonies.
I can vote for Kyler, but leaving two off the ballot's stupid. It's ridiculous.
It's stupid. All right, back with more. We're way over it, but first, Mike with the sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Well, that was a fun Heisman Trophy discussion.
You know, somebody else, I don't know if I'm in text, but somebody said Tua also had the Biletnikoff Award winner on his team. And I just responded, well, did he win it because of Tua, though? You know? It's different when you get to that level of quarterback play versus, and I liked him while he was the quarterback, but like Brandon Cooks at OSU, he was just another level of animal.
Right.
Whereas, like, I think Tua, before he got hurt, was just, we talked about it during the season. He was having statistically
the greatest
season we'd ever seen from a quarterback.
Yeah, and people argue if he played fourth quarters, he would have had the best season, statistically speaking, we've ever seen. So it's a fun debate. It's good to have some relevancy in the Heisman. Although, one last note on that, the ceremony is unwatchable.
Yeah, it didn't seem very good. When I watched when they announced it was Kyler,
Kyler Murray. Yeah, there's like some like foreign dude who's the head of the Heisman trustees, apparently, and he couldn't pronounce Tua's name.
He could not do Tua's name.
Did anybody else catch that? He tried like 2 or 3 times. This is the Heisman trustee. Like, he's the dude. And he couldn't pronounce his name. And then Tua finally like just mouthed to him, like, just say
just
Tua.
Say Tua. Yeah,
just leave it at
Tua.
That's
why I don't try to say the last name. I know I screw it up multiple times, so I just say Tua. But
can we call him Double T?
Who was the Oklahoma guy in the Oklahoma suit?
Billy Sims?
Is that who it was?
But yeah, their old running back who was wearing the Oklahoma Sooners jacket.
Billy Sims loved to tell the crowd that they had back-to-back Heisman winners. I think he was the only thing that saved that award ceremony for me, and some people probably thought that was annoying.
He was, as the kids would say, a little lit. He was. He was enjoying. Lit. He was enjoying himself up there on the
Sooner
stage,
nice.
Yelling the whole time. Yeah, I don't. They drag that thing out way too long. They need to compact that down to like a 30-minute show.
Yeah.
You give me a quick backstory on each of them. Boom, boom, boom. An interview or two. Name the winner
quickly. If we would have been doing a show in 1998, would you have been Peyton Manning easily, or would you have gone Charles Woodson?
Ooh.
I thought about this because somebody the other day on a national show had made a joke.
Uh-huh.
And they said, oh, you mean like when you take Heisman away from guys who should win it, like in 1998 when Peyton didn't win? And I thought, you know, Charles was pretty damn good in 1998. I get
he
how
he played
good
both
was.
Sides of the ball. He returned punts. That Michigan team won a co-national championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was 97, but either way.
Whatever the year
they were against
year,
each
yeah.
other, yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. I'd have to go back. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head.
But you're a big Peyton guy.
I'm also a big Charles Woodson guy.
Yeah,
I love
I
that
too.
97 Michigan team.
I did too.
That was an awesome squad. Yeah, so there you go. There's our thoughts on the Heisman Trophy. By the way, something maybe we'll talk about later in the show. Odds are already out for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And no real surprises at the top. But if you are of the belief that Justin Herbert is coming back to Eugene and you feel like a decent value bet, the field right now is plus 1,000 because at my bookie, he's not even named as a contender.
So there's two ways you could look at that. One, do you think Vegas thinks he's gone? Or two, they didn't have Kyler Murray in their first projections. He was part of the field, which also this year was plus 1,000.
So you could have won that. Good money if you put it on Kyler Murray to win the Heisman Trophy. So just something to keep an eye on as we already have the way too early Heisman odds for next year. All right, let's dig back into the NFL. We have a GM that is out in the National Football League. Somebody is now the president of everybody. And apparently coaching really doesn't matter. We'll get to those stories. Crunch time next on The Fan.
Just feeling the heat.
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I was out at the Glorious House of Gaines last night.
I was going to say, I did not see you this morning. I even looked for you because I got there super early, and I said, this is about the time he wanders his fat ass in here. Where is he?
No, I got to say, because I was cooped up after the whole illness thing for a couple of days, so I needed to get out of the house last night, and my trainer's not back from Atlanta yet. He went to the Timbers, the match.
He turned that into quite the extravaganza, the game. Didn't he?
I think he gets back today, like this afternoon or something. So, yeah, so I got my workout in last night instead.
Ooh, let's jump ahead a little. That we're going to talk about it now. Did you watch the Timbers match? 5-5-3-0-5.
Okay. We'll get to that in the final hour.
Mike, did you?
Yeah, he's a Timbers guy.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, soccer bro.
Went to a little watch party for it.
Oh, you went to a watch party for it.
At a bar or friend's house?
No, friend's house.
There you go.
There you go. I like it. We'll get to that in the final hour. Gary Anderson's back. Yeah, that's a thing. We'll get to that
really
as well.
That's really a thing, yeah.
I want to get to a couple of notes, a couple of final notes, I guess, if you will, in the National Football League. We have not got to yet. You know what John Gruden's favorite movie is?
A football movie of some sort, like A Football Life.
Captain Phillips, because he's now the president of everybody. as the Raiders have fired Reggie McKenzie, John Gruden had this to say. He left some big shoes to fill. We were very good friends. We were connected. We were very connected. There was a meeting last night. Changes were made. I can't exactly say why changes were made. We all work for the same man. He said he does not know. He does not know if he'll be involved in interviewing replacements. I'm not revealing any candidates because I don't know of any. So John Gruden has officially won his power grab, and it's all up to him in Oakland for the Raiders. Reggie McKenzie, who built the team that John Gruden has dismantled, is officially out.
And I have a feeling Reggie McKenzie is going to get picked up rather quickly this offseason when a team frees up a GM spot because what he was able to do and help build that playoff team a couple years ago. I'm not really surprised by this. I think every report and indication came that they didn't agree on a lot of things, and every controversial move that happened was basically John Gruden's decision, even though he tried to say it was an organizational decision.
It all started with Khalil Mack because Reggie McKenzie drafted Khalil Mack.
And he wanted to pay Khalil Mack, and John Gruden came in and said, nah, we're not going to pay a defensive end, who, by the way, I know he won't win. He won't even finish top three. Khalil Mack should be in the conversation for MVP, and I get quarterbacks win it. Sure. I understand that.
It's the way the award works.
How different is that organization since he arrived? That defense.
In Chicago, yeah.
I mean, it is incredible the energy he has brought to that team. I do give him a lot of credit for what they've been able to do this year. But because of that move, I think since then they have just not liked each other or disagreed on everything. And it basically was, hey, do you want to wait the year out or do you want to leave now? And he said, yeah, get me out of here.
Yeah, that's how bad things were. I enjoyed that because, as you mentioned, they gave him the option. You can finish the year here if you would like, which I don't know why. Why I don't even know why you would say we're going to fire you, but you can finish your job because you're not going to allow him to do anything in the coming weeks and months because he's going to ultimately be fired. That's how bad things were, though. He said, nah, I'm good. I'm out of here. So the Raiders no longer have a GM. One other NFL note, too. Have people noticed how well Baker Mayfield's been playing as of late?
Well, it's because of the run game and because of everybody else around him, not because of him. But sure. I've noticed that they've started to win now. And don't go crazy. They're right there in the wild card place.
Somebody texted in earlier. Place. I think if the Ravens and the Steelers lose out and the Browns win out, they win the division. Somebody texted that in earlier.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, because I think the Ravens are 7-6. Steelers are 7-5-1.
But they would have a tie. Well, three. Yeah. Oh, I guess you'd need them to win eight games.
So you would need them to lose out and the Browns to win out their final three games.
There you go.
But some numbers behind it. And this is since the Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley firing. So apparently coaching does really matter. So with Jackson and Haley in Cleveland before they were fired, Baker Mayfield completed 58% of his passes, averaged 6.6 yards per pass. He had 8 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and he had a 78 passer rating. Mm-hmm. He was sacked 20 times during that stretch. Then they fired the coach. They fired the offensive coordinator. Since then, from 58% completion to 73%, from 6 yards per pass up to 9, from 8 touchdowns up to 11, from 6 interceptions down to 4 interceptions, and from a 78 passer rating up to a 114 passer rating, and from 20 sacks down to 3.
Yeah.
Also not to mention, Hugh Jackson was there for 40 games as the head coach. They won 3 times. They have won 3 times since they fired him. They're 3-2 since they fired Hugh Jackson.
Hey, you just need a good Hugh Jackson to rally around after he loses his job.
It took Greg Williams 5 games to match Hugh Jackson's win total.
He, by the way, almost cost his team the game yesterday.
He did.
They declined.
Yeah.
Or no, they accepted the offsides penalty after making the extra point.
I forgot. I'm glad you brought that up.
They moved 5 yards closer and he freaking shanked it. It was only a 3-point game, but they made a stop against Cam and the Panthers. Look, here's the thing about Baker. I have been a big fan of Baker. I think the criticism nationally from one Colin Cowherd is a bit extreme. But the thing about Baker that he benefits from, and this is a good thing, he doesn't have to go out there and light it up every weekend. He doesn't need to throw it 30 to 40 times like some of these other quarterbacks.
No.
Maybe that will have some people thinking he's just going to be a game manager his whole life. Or maybe he does turn into kind of that pseudo Russell Wilson type guy who's efficient, doesn't cost you too many games with turnovers. I don't know what the future holds, but I think it's all about where you go. And some guys, you're going to translate no matter what. I think there's a lot of guys in NFL history, not to name too many greats, but I think there's a lot of greats out there that they landed in the perfect environment.
Sure.
And everything clicked for them. And maybe Cleveland will click for Baker and maybe it won't. But I think for the rookie year, Sam Darnold has struggled because he's been a Jet, and Baker's had more success because he's in Cleveland.
It's funny to say that, though, isn't it?
It's very weird.
The Browns are now. I know they don't have they have an interim head coach, so I get that. But they feel stable, which is weird.
They do feel stable?
Like they're winning games, and we're not freaking out.
No,
like they won. Like
kind of normal.
Like, hey, look at that! They beat the Panthers. How about that?
Well, and that spread was one. I was kind of thinking it was going to be the Browns.
Yeah, I took the Browns on the money line. I was one of the few I won over the weekend. So,
and this is kind of a funny point. Bengals have not won since acquiring Hugh.
Now, AJ Green, Andy Dalton, I mean, the injuries have played a part of that. But
what does he do there?
You're not wrong.
What does he do there?
What exactly do you do around?
Do we
here?
Know if he actually does anything, or if that was just get me on the sidelines, give me a job?
I thought he just stands behind Marvin Lewis, just claps a little bit, chews his gum, tries to look important. So some funny numbers on Baker Mayfield. They've won 3 of the 5 since Hugh Jackson was fired. His numbers have taken off in the last 5 games. He's playing good football, and they got to win. over Carolina on Sunday. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Still to come in the final hour, we'll get into that Monday night game, which you can hear right here on The Fan. This is a big one. I'm excited for it. Playoff implications. Minnesota needs a win. Seattle, if they win this game, seems like a lock to make the postseason. So we'll get into that ball game a little bit. Gary Anderson is back in college football. How does that make Beaver fans feel? The Timbers lost their championship match on Saturday. We'll dive into that, give you some numbers behind it. And there's a new coach in the Pac-12. Does anybody care? Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.